and went to Swargaloka. Another is the predominating deity of sacrifice in Treta Yuga. And he teaches that process. A fourth one took the earth planet at a time when the hills and mountains, or some hills and mountains, were too high, and ground those mountains and hills to dust until they were the right size. And then the Mother Earth assumed the form of Varahi, and as a result of their combination, two children were born. That form of Varaha disappeared, concluded his pastimes, by merging into Lord Nrsingadev. Then there's a fifth Varaha, and there may well be others. There's a fifth one who is down there under the earth with Kurama, also holding up the earth. So this is just a little sampling. Then there are numerous Nrsingadevs. One tore apart Hiranyakashipu. Another, now this is what the book says, so, you know, take it as it is, I guess. Another one defeated all the celestial mothers. That's what it says. Then this is just about the most interesting one. A third one assumed the form of an ordinary household cat. Then there are at least two Vamanas. One tricked Bali. The other tricked a demon named Dundu. And Dundu, who, anyway, there is a Dundu in Srimad Bhagavatam, and he was a demon. But he was killed by somebody. Anyway, maybe that's another Dundu, but this Dundu was tricked also by Lord Vamana, and he was a demon. So they're all transcendental. And they're all the Lord. He says that you shouldn't understand them as being like reflections of the sun in different bodies of water. If you've got a number of pots full of water and the sun is reflected in each, it's not like that. Why? Because that would mean there's only one Lord. And there are many reflections, but they're not really the Lord. They just appear to be. So they're insubstantial. So the example, the way we should understand them is that they are like the sun, who is seen differently by different people who are standing in different settings on the earth in different places. In other words, one is seeing the sun over the mountains. Another is seeing the sun through the trees. Another is seeing the sun over the ocean. You get the idea? They're seeing the same sun, but they're different settings. So therefore their experience of the sun is somewhat different. And if you satisfy one form, all the other forms are satisfied. So, why does he manifest all these forms? To satisfy all the devotees. So, what comes first? The form or the desire of the devotee for the form, for a form? According to this, it's the desire of the devotee. So they're all the same person. It is not that there's only one form and the other forms are illusory. It is not that there are many lords, independent individuals, but there is one Lord appearing in many forms. And he gives the example of Lord Brahma. As he gives his own example, Narada Muni, that he went to Dwarka and he saw the Lord in so many different situations. He went to one palace, the Lord was joking with Rukmini. He went to another palace and the Lord was meditating on himself. He went to another palace, the Lord was practicing fighting. He went to another palace, it was the afternoon. He went to the next palace, it was the morning. And each time when the Lord saw him, the Lord said, "Oh, Narada, you've come. How wonderful." It wasn't that, "Oh, it's you again. I just saw you next door. You're very persistent." Not like that. Each time it was, "Oh, how amazing. What good fortune. You have come, Narada." And similarly with Lord Brahma. Well, his experience was different, but same principle is illustrated. First of all, there was Krishna. Then Brahma stole the cowherd boys and calves. Then there was Krishna as the cowherd boys and calves. Then, very shortly afterwards, Krishna manifested the Vishnu forms. And then he showed himself as like the Param Brahma, the Supreme Absolute. And then he's again Krishna. So Lord Brahma had experience like that. These are authorized experiences of how the one Lord is manifesting in different forms. Yes. So he does this for the sake of his pastimes, and Narada gives the example of the gopis and the queens. This indicates, of course, that Narada knows more about things than he is maybe letting on, or more about things than there is just in Vaikuntha at least. He says, the gopis and queens, they love Krishna so much. They want to serve him. They want to offer him something. So all the gopis or all the queens, they offer him something to eat at the same time. He appears in an individual form with each one and accepts their offering. And each one thinks, he is accepting my offering. Only. Or as in the rasa dance, he is only dancing with me. Just see. So for the sake of the pastimes, all these forms are there in different ways under different circumstances. Then the next thing, he talks about how the goddess of fortune, Mahalakshmi, the same principles apply with her. She is the counterpart of the Lord, so she does the same things. When he manifests a certain form, she assumes a suitable form to be the associate, to be the consort. So she is also, it's exactly the same really, so many forms of Mahalakshmi. However, Narada Muni says, however, people are generally familiar with Lakshmi, who is the bestower of opulence within the material world. But he says that that form of Lakshmi is not taken very seriously. The Lord prefers even the neophyte devotees to her because she's very unsteady. Sometimes she's with him, then she ducks away to give someone some fortune. And then she's back. So he doesn't take her so seriously. And not only does he not take her so seriously, but the devotees, the liberated souls, the candidates for liberation, they also don't really care for that form of Mahalakshmi. And she has so many expansions, like all the wives of Vaikunthanath, the Lord of Vaikuntha. Then all the Durga forms, they're also expansions, sort of separated or reflected expansions. She has so many forms. Then she has Swarup Lakshana and Tatastha Lakshana. She has her essential qualities or characteristics and her secondary or marginal characteristics, qualities. Her Swarup Lakshana, her essential qualities are that she is the totality of eternality, knowledge, and bliss. She is eternal, absolutely real, and without beginning and end, and therefore there is no way to describe her fully. And in that feature or that sort of aspect of her is called Mahavibhuti or Yoga Maya. That's her Swarup Lakshana. Then her Tatastha Lakshana, her secondary nature or secondary qualities, secondary features are that she is the agent through who the different types of sweetness and wonder in devotional service and even in the forms of the Lord are manifest. Yeah. In other words, she is a special ingredient. She adds the sweetness and wonder in the different types of devotional service and the different forms of the Lord and the different pastimes that the Lord has in his different forms, the special qualities that are displayed there of sweetness, beauty, and wonder, they are manifested through her. As a result, or on this basis, she empowers the Lord's abodes with their special qualities. She empowers the devotees with their special qualities. And she enhances devotional service with its special qualities of sweetness and wonder and beauty. She, in other words, she is like the active agent or active ingredient which gives special charm to all these things. How does that sound? Sort of handle that? Kind of? Of course, he says next that it is very difficult to understand. Actually, he says the devotees can understand this, but the dry logicians cannot understand it. Then he says that when we consider the Lord's energy as two, some of his most supreme features are displayed when he enters this world. That'll be explained after a little while, or in a couple of chapters.
how the Lord displays his most amazing qualities when he appears on earth or within this material world. So then, analyzing the situations of the devotees in Vaikuntha, remember, it's already been said that they're more or less equal and they're not great differences. You know, it's not really very great differences. There tends to be a sense of equality between the devotees. So, Narada Muni says that in Vaikuntha, all the devotees experience the topmost pleasure in terms of their particular moods. In other words, if you ask any of them, they'll say, yes, I experience the topmost pleasure. Even though they may experience quite different pleasures or different types of pleasures because they're serving differently. So therefore they're having different experiences in their services. So there are different results for the different services, but all of them feel as satisfied, so therefore we don't really make distinctions so much. He says the Lord's pastimes expand into unlimited varieties. Why? Because the Lord's mind is fathomless. Therefore he has unlimited capacity for pastimes. And in them he does many things, but particularly he displays his mercy to the highest degree possible, as can be experienced by the particular devotee who he is relating to. I thought that was a very nice point. Did you catch that point? No? His pastimes are unlimited because his mind is unlimited. In his pastimes, he displays many wonderful things, but the most wonderful thing is his mercy, which he gives to the devotees to the highest degree that they are capable of accepting in terms of who they are and what, you know, their natures are, and like that. He'll give them all the mercy they can take. And that is the most wonderful part of his pastimes. These devotees, they're all on the platform of ultimate reality. So there's no question of being interested in material happiness. If there appears to be any hierarchy, it is just because there are different types of services. That's all. Then he says, actually, there are two levels of devotees. There are the eternal associates, like Anantashesh and Garuda. Then there are those who came recently, like Bharat Maharaj, Priyavrata, and Jayan Vijay. So there are slight differences in the way these two groups relate with the Lord. The eternal associates are closer, and the more recent associates are at a little more of a distance. And when the Lord appears in the material world, Only eternal associates go with him. In fact, those eternal associates are so amazing, you can hardly tell the difference between them and the Lord. In fact, in some respects, they're equal. What are the respects they're equal in? They are equally eternal, Satchit Ananda. They're equal in terms of Sat, Chit, and Ananda. So what is the difference? The difference is that the devotees are helplessly attracted to serving the Lord, like iron filings are helplessly attracted to a magnet. And the Lord accepts the service. Devotional service has such an amazing potency. I mean, I hope these are not too many points for the mind, but as Krishna is absolute, so in Vaikuntha, his devotees are absolute also. By dint of being his energies, by dint of being one with him in that sense, how do they display their oneness? Through, Narada Muni says, the playful expansion of his pure spiritual energy, which is bhakti. Through the bhakti shakti, the Lord, because of the bhakti shakti which the devotees have, the Lord is transforming and performing pastimes in response to the devotees and their bhakti shakti. So therefore there's a oneness and extraordinary type of oneness between the Lord and his devotees. Hare Krishna. So how are we doing, devotees? Are we still in Vaikuntha? No anxiety? How about a little deity worship? That's the next subject. Gopakumar is quite fond of deity worship. After all, he was the king. And he turned the whole kingdom into a festival for the deity. And then he was in Jagannath Puri. And he just loved the deity of Jagannath. Oh! So Gopakumar, he's very fond of deity worship. However, he has a doubt. Now, as we mentioned a little earlier, there was some reference to deity worship. How certain devotees are worshipping the Lord in Vaikuntha in different forms, and some of them in the deity form. They're worshipping the deity. So, Gopakumar has heard that, but he has a doubt. He says, you know, you have mentioned deity worship as if the form of the deity is no less than any of these other forms that you've been talking about. However, in certain of the Puranas, there are some statements which appear to minimize deity worship. Like, actually gives a number of quotes, but one of them is famous verse 11.2.47 from Srimad Bhagavatam. Archayam eva haraye pujam ya shradaye hate. Na tad bhakteshu chanyeshu sa bhakta prakrita smrita. A devotee who faithfully engages in the worship of the deity in the temple that does not behave properly toward other devotees or people in general is called a Prakriti Bhakta, a materialistic devotee, and is considered to be in the lowest position. And there are numerous other statements saying somewhat similar things, which appear to reflect negatively on deity worship. So Gopakumar, he's fond of deity worship, but he's not happy about this. So he asks, why? Why are these statements there in these Puranas? And what do they really mean? Are they true, or is there some mistake? Now Narada Muni, of course, he's a big expert in deity worship. So he says, no, they're all correct. Those statements are all correct. But you have to understand what they're talking about. He says there are two main types of deity worship. In one type, the devotee is convinced that the form I am worshipping is the Lord directly. Then, Narada says, whatever form the person worships, form of the Lord, as long as they are convinced that this is directly the Lord, he is standing there in person in the deity form. Even if the form is a concoction, even if he worships, Narada Muni says, even if he worships a blade of grass as the Lord, recognizing the Lord within, he says this is first class devotional service, and even if they offend other devotees, those offenses should not be taken seriously, and yes, they'll never fall down. But some people, they are worshipping some form. Again, it could be any form, including a concocted form. But they think that it just sort of represents the Lord. It's just an image. It is not actually the Lord. It's just some representational type of thing. So, they do not receive the fruits of deity worship. And he says, these verses that you have referred to, they are talking about that type of person. That type of person who does not recognize that the deity is directly the Lord, commits offenses, becomes proud, and does not receive the results of deity worship. So they're considered materialistic devotees. However, an interesting little last point. Even if these worshippers are fully dedicated to their worship, their hearts will become purified. And if they get the association of good devotees, they can also become first-class devotees in due course of time. Ah, well, we're almost there. The glories of pure devotional service on the level of prema. So Narada Muni says there are two types of devotees, pure and impure. The impure devotees who have material desires, their material desires are fulfilled before they receive the results of their devotional service. Therefore, the pure devotees criticize them. That's an interesting way of putting it. their material desires are fulfilled before they receive the results of their devotional service. Therefore, pure devotees say they are faulty. The pure devotee is on the level of prema. This is mainly what we're talking about here, devotional service on the level of prema. They cannot...